Okay, so I will talk on really magnetic Schrödinger operators with magnetic periodic magnetic Schrödinger operators, and I will start with some general setting. So let me just say what kind of operators I will consider, and I just take some notation. So I will consider, yes, a non-compact smooth manifold which admits some action of a discrete group, and I will assume some additional assumption that the first Betti number of the manifold vanishes. Well, just for simplicity, you can consider just M is the Euclidean space and gamma just integer translations. So the usual periodic situation. And I will assume that there is this the remaining gamma invariant remaining metric on this manifold written in this way. And now I'll just consider magnetic field. So this is going to be a real value, again, periodic, close to form. And moreover, I assume that this two form is exact. So there exists a magnetic potential, which is one form. But unlike B and G, this magnetic potential is in general non-periodic. And the operator which I am going to consider just the Schrödinger operator with this magnetic potential. So in geometrical notation I can write in this way, but if we are thinking about the Euclidean space, this is going to be this bit complicated operator which looks like the Laplace-Beltrami operator but with magnetic terms. Or even simpler, we can assume that the just have the Euclidean metric, not the general periodic Riemannian metric, but just the Euclidean metric, and in this case we get such an operator in L2RN. And I'm going to discuss a very simple problem just about the spectrum of this operator. This is a self-adjoint operator. If the spectrum just the semi-axis starting from some positive number, or we have some gaps or holes in this, and let me just remind what I mean by gaps. So gaps just these, just some interval which are not inside the spectrum. And the problem is, are there gaps in the spectrum of this operator? And more generally, how many we can get these gaps? So are there arbitrary many number of gaps? So can we arrange that we have 2 or 10 gaps or 10,000 gaps? And we will study this problem not for an individual operator, but we will study this problem in the semi-classical limit when h goes to 0. And all our results will be of this type. So at the limit, we will get as many gaps as we want. And first result which I should mention in this direction, this result of Hempeler-Herbst of 94, and they consider the following situation. They don't consider any manifold, just UV Euclidean space and integer translations, and they consider two sets. The set where the magnetic field vanishes, I mean B, and the set when the magnetic potential vanishes. And they assume the following. So they assume that S has non-empty interior part, And actually, all the up to measure zero, these sets, roughly speaking, coincide. So this means this. The measure of this set is zero. And also just take, so we, in this case, we have the fundamental cell, which is the unit cube. This is S naught. And this is, suppose that S naught just a compactly supported open subset. And they proved that in this case, there exists such a limit in the norm resolvent convergence. So the resolvence of these operators converges in the norm, in the norm topology, and where delta S just the Laplace operator. And maybe to explain more what happens here, let me draw some picture which I put here. And in this way, so we see, say we have a plane, the plane just, we have the fundamental cell. Inside of this, this is the set of zeros of A that almost everywhere coincides with the similar zero set of B. And in this case, if you look at the operator which I consider, so then H goes from these two, instead of small parameter before D, we have a large parameter before the magnetic field. And that means that everywhere inside this set, S naught, the magnetic field vanishes. But outside this set, the magnetic field goes to infinity. It's going to be larger and larger. And that means that in some sense, we really, and it is proven that we have such a convergence. So
delta S is the Laplace operator.
Which Dirichlet bounded
inside
of S. Right, yes. And using the well-known facts from the spectral theory, this implies that there is so-called spectral convergence. And that means that this spectrum approaches to this eigenvalue, to this set. So let's see what I draw here. So we know that this just the discrete set of eigenvalues. And we put H square. And what means that the spectrum of H of H accumulates around these eigenvalues with some speed. And this not multiplied by H square. So all the spectrum goes to zero with the speed H squares. And these intervals are going to be smaller and smaller than H goes to zero. And that means that we have some gaps here, here, but this convergence is not uniform. So we have first one gap opened up, second gap opened up, and so on. Eventually we will get finite number of gaps on any interval of the size of size H square. And the larger the interval, the more gaps we will have. So in this case, we have such a nice result, and we will try to generalize this result. And actually, what is important here that we have magnetic well, so we have in a certain sense, magnetic field goes to infinity, and to formulate this phenomenon, we need the notion of magnetic wells. And to now let me introduce some notions which are related with this. So to let me formulate this rigorously. So I recall that I have the magnetic field which is close to form. And I have a metric, and I have the Riemannian metric. Using the Riemannian metric, I can shift, so this is 2-0 tensor, and I can make 1-1 tensor, so a linear operator. So this is going to be the corresponding linear operator. I define this in this way. So this is a matrix. And I'll define, first of all, the trace norm of this matrix in this way. But it turns out the most important quantity is not this, but the so-called intensity of the magnetic field, which is defined in this way. And also we can define in terms of eigenvalues. So we have a skew symmetric square matrix. Then all the eigenvalues goes in pairs. They are purely imaginary and conjugate. So we have plus I lambda and minus I lambda. Take all lambdas which are positive, and the sum of these lambdas gives us this trace plus. And unlike this trace norm, so B depends smoothly on X, and the trace norm of B also is a smooth function.
If they go in pair in the except the zero.
Yes, yeah, so well, certainly it's a trivial pair. So right here, unlike this trace norm of B, the intensity of the magnetic field is in general, well, not smooth. It's just only continuous function. But we will work with this function because it's more convenient for us, and everything can be done in terms of this. So actually, this gives us continue. And okay, so it is this function, the intensity of the magnetic field, that we will use to define magnetic wells. So magnetic wells just as are wells with respect to this function. So first of all, we take the minimal value of this function, and we will assume that
If you just have a usual magnetic field in R3, so what is this going to be then?
What do you mean usual?
You have only one non-zero
constant.
Yes.
There is only.
I don't see the difference. Trace plus versus just trace.
Sorry.
B star B what? B star B is a positive operator, right?
B star B, yes.
So you're just taking the sum of the squares.
Well, I don't want to take the sum of squares. I first take the square root of this, and then take the trace.
The sum of the square. You take the square root. So what's the difference? It's just so I understand that.
So suppose I take this, then I take the square root of this. So if I have such a matrix, the square root, sorry, maybe my, well.
Yeah, but for B, the natural.
No, B star, yes, zero. This is going to be lambda square and zero. So this is B star B. And then take square root. This is going to be lambda, absolute value of lambda. take trace. And take 1/2 to get what I have written there.
So that's a trace norm, basically. Basically, the trace norm.
Well, no, okay, right. If you are thinking about operators in a Hilbert space, yes, it's just a trace norm. No, that's right. Okay, certainly. And okay, let me put another picture here. So I have a periodic trace plus of B, which is the periodic function. Let me put this. So B naught is the bottom of this function. And we still have a sort of well. And I assume that epsilon naught is the well, we can just take epsilon naught to be the infinitum of the I assume that the bottom is not on the boundary. The bottom is inside. So on the boundary we have larger values of this function. That's what I have written here. And then I consider such sets, and each set can be considered. I draw this like U epsilon 1. It's a sort of well. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have. And the first result, which is tells, roughly speaking, that if our magnetic field have such magnetic wells, we always have gaps in the spectrum, and actually as many gaps as we want. And this is my first result, which I was going to discuss. And this is a joint result with Bernard-Lefebvre. But we have some technical assumption, which we don't know how to avoid. So I consider this set, so inside of U epsilon naught, inside of, well, not inside of, okay, U epsilon naught, maybe even less set. Consider the set of all x such the rank of B, the rank of the magnetic field is constant. It's locally constant. Well, we know that. And we assume that if we take this set, that is the set of all points where the rank of B is locally constant, we assume that this trace norm is not locally constant. You may think, well, it's always possible. But if you try to prove this, you came to the same example, to same exotic examples like functions which have derivatives everywhere equal zero but growing, something like this again. And it's not clear how to avoid this with linear algebra, but in linear algebra, but we can show that in physical dimensions, when we have just this trace plus of B is related to just one eigenvalue, this always true. This is always true, so in this case we don't need more assumption, just we say the theorem, and theorem tells us that if we take any interval, say, well, okay, not just any, but if we take just this interval which we have here from zero to this value at the boundary, then, or roughly speaking, inside the magnetic wells, we have as many gaps as we want in the semi-classical limit. If we have n gaps, that's true if h is small enough. So in this assumption is generic, and so for a generic case, we always have not only one gap, but as many gaps as we want. And let me just explain a little bit how we can prove this. And for the proof, we use some, okay. First, let me take this open set, which I claim to exist. So the set where the rank of B is constant, B of X is constant, and the trace norm, or the intensity, varies. We can assume certainly that this is inside of this U epsilon 1 for any epsilon 1 smaller than epsilon naught. And we take just the Dirichlet operator inside of this domain, and we take the eigenvalues of this operator, and it's clear that the number of these eigenvalues grows polynomially when h goes to zero. We have only polynomially many number of eigenvalues of this operator. And then we can prove this localization, which is typical for results of concerning to, so we use tunneling, we use Sagman estimates and so on, and we prove the fact that the spectrum of our operator contains in exponentially small neighborhoods of these lambdas. So what do we? So we in this case, we can show that the spectrum for this interval is inside of these exponentially small intervals. The number of these intervals is polynomially large. So we see we have gaps because we have polynomially many numbers, exponentially small neighborhoods. Well, it's impossible to cover all the interval by this interval. So we have gaps in the semi-classical limit, but the question, why do we have arbitrarily many gaps, and what's the problem? The problem that we might have some accumulation. Okay, we have like this. Well, we have polynomially many eigenvalues, but why it could be possible that all these eigenvalues are on exponentially small interval? So we have a large gap, but only one. So for these purposes, we have to prove that these eigenvalues distributed in some way uniformly. And for this goal, we need a sort of constant rank assumption. And we use some construction of quasi-modes and some another technique. And, well, quasi-mode construction goes from the paper by Helfer and Mohammed of 96. And we prove that actually if you take any value from this interval and we take h mu, then any interval of this size which can be estimated uniformly on h contains the point in the spectrum. And that means that we really have a sort of uniform distribution. Well, we have not such an extreme accumulation. All these eigenvalues are uniformly distributed in a certain sense. And that's a generic case. But in this case, we just have existence. It's a sort of existence result. We can show that, okay, we have as many gaps as we want, but we have no information about location of these gaps. Does they exist? Say 10 gaps exist, nothing more. And to have more precise information on location of gaps, we have to assume some additional assumption on the bottom. Well, we know some assumption. Is the bottom flat? We saw from the result by Hempel-Herbst, then we have really a spectral accumulation with the speed h squared. In this case, we have h. But we will relax this assumption a little bit. So this is the second result. And so first of all, we assume that B naught equals zero. So the bottom, we have at least one zero of B. Then we assume that this function behaves quite regularly near each zero of B, like certain power of X. And in this case, and this is my result of 2005, we show that we again have a sort of spectral concentration with this speed. So there is a certain number, there is a certain sequence of numbers going with this speed, h to the power 2k plus 2 over k plus 2. And we have spectral concentration to this set. So again, we have the same phenomena. If h is small enough, gaps open up. And let me just compare the result, what we have, in both three cases which I discussed. So we saw that for generic case, we had the number of gaps goes to infinity on the interval of order of h. Right?
And here you need also the corresponding result that's outside that you have effectively eigenvalue.
Sorry?
I don't see in the statement you say. You just said that some interval is not in the spectrum. So in order to have the gap result, you need also to show that in the complementary of the union of this interval, you have effectively...
No, that's right. This also can be... yes, right. No, but by default, I mean this. Yes. And in this my result, we have with some k this behavior, and we have spectral concentration to some sequence. And finally, for the case of Hempel-Herbst, we have h squared. So this looks like k goes to infinity, and this looks like k equals zero. So that's really three cases which are quite, well, quite fit one to each other. Okay, let me say now some words about the proof of this result. And this uses a sort of what should be called non-commutative block theory and operator algebras. And actually this uses method of my previous joint paper with Varghese Matai and Mikhail Shubin. But first of all, let me explain what does where this lambdas comes out. And as usual, these lambdas are eigenvalues of some operator. And this is so-called, well, the model operator. And let me explain this operator a little bit. And this construction, in this particular case, again, goes from the paper by Bernard and Morame. Not that time, Mohammed. Okay, and so we take the fundamental domain such that there is no zeros on the boundary of this fundamental fundamental domain. Let's take all the zeros. We have finitely many zeros inside the this fundamental domain, and let me again show some picture. I take some sufficiently small neighborhood of each zero. So ux1 bar, ux2 bar, and so on. And I map all these neighborhoods to a fixed ball centered at zero, such any x bar goes to zero. And then the magnetic field can be written as a one form in the local coordinates, AG. But we know that the magnetic field, that is B, is small at each is small at zero.
The same letter for three different things: the trace plus of the magnetic field, and the ball. No?
Well, for ball it's okay. I'm sorry. Okay, and it's quite difficult problem to make different notation. I will also have operator algebras, which I am going to denote A. Well, I can use different alphabets. Also, different, you see, bold A, and so on. Okay, and so each B, so the magnetic field B vanishes at each point, but that's not true for the magnetic potential. But we can also make the magnetic potential also small by using gauge transformation. So for any G, we take the function and we take just the corresponding gauge invariant magnetic potential near each zero. And after this, we just take, so this A is of the power k. And we just take the main part of this, just the leading term in Taylor expansion of A near this zero. So what do we get? We get this. We get this gauge invariance, and the operator, the model operator, is the sum of this is the sum of the corresponding magnetic Schrödinger operators in L to Rn. So in a certain sense, if you look at this picture, we have we have the magnetic Schrödinger operator everywhere. But now, around each zero, we construct a lot, a sort of approximation for this operator. And this approximation acts in some sense in L2IN, which corresponds to each to each neighborhood of this. Say people in asymptotic analysis say that we construct a sort of interior expansion. They have interior expansion, exterior expansions, and try to match them. We just construct.
You mean the sum of alpha small equal k plus 1, the formula.
Sorry?
The formula. You really mean alpha equals k plus 1? Second sum.
No, I don't think so.
Second sum, do you really mean you take only the k plus 1 tie of it, or?
So the smaller one as 0.
Yeah, so because A of order k.
The magnetic field vanishes at order k.
So. Oh, yeah, okay.
The magnetic, yeah, I see.
B
vanishes of order k, and A vanishes of order k plus 1. I just take the leading term of order k plus 1. And that's the model operator. Now, I'm going to explain what does it mean, non-commutative Bloch theory. And for this, I should go to some operator algebras. And actually, first, what I should mention that, as I said, the magnetic Schrödinger operator is not periodic, actually. It's not translation invariant. But what is well known that we have still symmetries for these operators. And these symmetries called magnetic translations. So roughly speaking, if we take, and for the construction of this magnetic translation, I need this assumption that the first Betti number of the manifold vanishes. That means that any closed one form is exact. And if I know this fact, then what we do, if we just take any translation of the operator, we again get the magnetic Schrödinger operator, but with a different magnetic field.
Potential.
But with different magnetic potential, but with the same magnetic field. And then we use gauge invariant, which says that if we have two magnetic potentials with the same magnetic field, then they are unitary equivalent. So we can use this unitary, and this unitary equivalence given by some multiplication, by some function. And using this fact, we can construct magnetic translations. So this is going to be a unitary operator in L2 space, which corresponds to any gamma, which computes with the Schrödinger operator. But we have to pay something, and what we pay that these translations are, these translations don't commute. So we have this relation where sigma is a group 2 cycle. And then we take the corresponding algebra of operators. So this is so-called the reduced twisted group sister algebra of gamma. So this is just the sister algebra generated by all these operators. So what we do, we just have a family of operators. We just take the algebra which is generated by these operators. And we take the uniform closure. And the idea, and we can show that if we take the fundamental domain, then not only the operator commutes with a certain Sist algebra, but also it belongs to another Sist algebra, which corresponds in this case to sigma bar, just the conjugate cocycle. In some sense, this means that on a Lie group, we have on a discrete group, we have operators which commute with left translation. Then they are right translation. So, okay, if this family commute, then we know what does it mean, Bloch theory. Then we can say that L2 decomposes into a direct integral. And that means, and this is due to the fact that the algebra of symmetries, well, is commutative. And if you have a commutative family of operators, we can decompose any, acting in a Hilbert space, it is diagonalizable. So we have really a direct sum decomposition of this Hilbert space. But now we don't have this. What we use instead, we just try to reformulate all the methods of the commutative Bloch theory as the language of operator algebras, as the language of this algebra. And what I need for use for existence of gap is so-called Mirey von Neumann equivalence of projections. And let me remind you that if I have two projections in a Sist algebra, then they are Mirey von Neumann equivalent if they are represented in this ways for some x. What is helpful for us that we have trace, and if we have any trace on an Sist algebra, then the trace takes the same values on Mirey von Neumann equivalent projections. And for instance, if I have just two Mirey von Neumann equivalent projections in the algebra of all bounded operators, then they have the same rank. And now the statement is that we really have this. So let me remind. So we have the magnetic Schrödinger operator. And we have the corresponding spectral projection, which acts in the space L2M. Now we have the model operator, which acts, it's a sum of it's a sum of operators which acts in this space. I make tensor product with L2 gamma. That smallly means that I just take all the translations of these operators using gamma. So I have two projections in two different, acting in two different Hilbert spaces. Actually, I can take any equivariant isometry of these two Hilbert spaces. Just, I know, say, for instance, I know that this space is a tensor product of L2 gamma tensor L2 on fundamental domain. And I just take any isomorphism of L2 on the fundamental domain with L2 on this space. And then it can be shown that both these projections belong to this Sist algebra, first of all, and they are Mirey von Neumann equivalent in this Sist algebra. Actually, this result means, I use this for the proof of existence of gaps, but first motivation, which goes from the previous work which I mentioned, with Matai and Shubin was to apply this result to quantum Hall effect. And for this, we use pairing, we use cyclic cohomology, we use pairing with cyclic oscillators, because Hall conductivity is a pairing of the spectral projection with some cocycle, so-called Kubo cocycle. And if two projections are Mirey von Neumann equivalent, then not only traces take the same value on these projections, but also pairing with any cocycle. And this allows us to prove in that case that Hall conductivity vanishes if H is small enough. This uses Kohn-Bielisar approach based on non-commutative geometry to the quantum Hall effect. And actually, this is some information concerning eigenvalues, and I guess that that's maybe for people working in deformation quantization, that in a certain sense it's a statement that in this case, we have a sort of continuous field of cyst algebras and continuous field of Hilbert spaces. So in a certain sense, we've proven that the eigenvalues, so in this case, we have continuous spectrum. And it's a problem how to formulate what does it mean, the spectrum of the operator with continuous spectrum, the eigenspaces, depend continuously on H. And I think from this result, one can get some information on these eigenspaces as well. Well, I don't know, but I use this. So, how do we use this result for the existence of spectral gaps? It's quite easy. So, suppose we have we know that the model operator has a discrete spectrum, right? Now take the spectrum, so that means that if I have the trace of this, so inside of this, this trace is constant. This is for the model operator, right? Now I take our operator. And what I know that I can take a little bit small interval such that for any lambdas from this interval, for any lambda from this interval, this and this spectral projection are Mirey von Neumann equivalent. That means that they have the same traces. So the important thing that we have the trace on cyst algebra. And that means that this trace is constant. But now we go back. If this trace is constant, we have no spectrum. There is no spectrum in this interval. And this is a way how this, so it's a certain way, a reformulation of certain, well, I don't know. So just if we work with commutative algebra, so that means that we have a family of projections, and we can prove that for any particular value of a parameter in this direct sum decomposition, direct integral decomposition, both projections have the same rank. And let me finish just with indicating how we... So what is pleasant here that we prove this theorem, and the paper of by myself, Matai and Shubin concerns to the case of stronger electric field. We have no... Well, we have magnetic field, but really we have a large parameter before the electric field. And what is pleasant is that we have a very general scheme, just purely functional analytic.
You mean that the wells are created by the electric potential?
Yes. In the previous, yes, we had just wells created by electric potential.
You got H squared and Q.
Yes. And that this scheme is purely functional analytic. Just we use very rough idea. So we have two operators which are closed on some subspace, which goes to infinity outside of this space. And let me indicate this scheme. So this is a general, these are general results due to. Okay, so suppose we have, okay, now I changed the letter. So suppose we have a sister algebra. We have a Hilbert space, which is a model over this algebra, so we have a representation. We have two space, okay, and now let me show just you, well, okay. Because otherwise it's getting very unclear. And also I show, okay, so we have a sister algebra which looks like this. So this is a sister algebra which contains, which is affiliated with our operator. Then we have H. H is a sort of universal space. Just because we have two spaces, H1 and H2, we have two operators. And we want to compare these operators. Well, we can use isomorphism of the, we can take any isomorphism of this Hilbert spaces. But there is another way. We just take the universal space and we map both spaces to this universal space. So we have H and we have H1 and H2. So this is a space just L to M where our Schrödinger operator lives. And this is the space where our model operator lives. Well, multiplied by with tensor multiplication by the identity, that means that we just take translations, just trivial translations with respect to gamma. And we have a common path in some sense. So, okay, we have operators, self-adjoint, semi-bounded operators. So we have A1 and A2, which are self-adjoint, semi-bounded from below, which are affiliated with our sister algebra. And we have H0, which is a sort of common path. So in our case, which is just L2 on B. So we can embed this H0 to the right, just expanding B to the whole Rn. Or we can embed this H0 to this, to the left, just taking the corresponding neighborhood in the fundamental domain and extending to the whole fundamental domain. And what do we know? And what do we have more? Actually, we need more. We need a sort of cutoff operator. So instead of this small ball, we should have a sort of cutoff function. Just this is an operator given by cutoff function. We have some natural assumption for this. Just this is just a bounded operator. Some assumption which are quite natural. From the point of our situation. And what is typical and what is quite natural, we really use a sort of IMS localization formula, so we take the corresponding operators. We assume that this assumption means that we just roughly consider just second order differential operators. And what do we have? We assume that on this, that means outside of H node, but with some cutoff, we have some estimates from above. Typically, this alpha goes to infinity. But on the domain of G, morally on H node, these two quadratic forms are equivalent in some sense. That's what all we need. So on this part they are equivalent, and on this part they go to infinity. But we also need a trace. So we need the trace on our SIST algebra. And again we take spectral projections, and the main result is the following theorem. So if we have some a bit complicated, so if we have some interval A1, B1, which is not in the spectrum of A1, which is a gap in the spectrum of A1, then we can take a smaller interval indeed, given by these formulas, such that this interval is a gap in the spectrum of the second operator. And actually, these spectral projections are Murray von Neumann equivalent. And what is also nice in this, maybe nice in this theorem, that this condition is symmetric. We can take, so there is no operator and its approximation. So both operators play the same role. And this is the main theorem, which uses very general assumptions, nothing more. Nothing special about operators, just some functional analytic properties. That's all. And let me finish just with some references on the papers which I discussed here. Thank you.